Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is musician, singer-songwriter Travis Knapp. Knapp studied at the Conservatory of Music at Ithaca College. He was awarded the BMI John Lennon Songwriting Scholarship in 2008, which he used to study permaculture and start a market gardening business. In addition to his music and performing, he practices permaculture, wildcrafting, and regenerative agriculture. He recently released his third album called All the Stars You Hold. It's a beautiful collection that features fiddle tunes, meditative moods, and wonderful storytelling. It also features backup by some of our best local musicians and vocalists. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dish.
Now, I have to ask you this. I read that you have been playing piano since you were five. So did you come from a musical family? Were you pushed into this, or is this something that you just lapped onto somehow?
Well, yeah. My older brother and sister played piano, and my mom, too, when they were taking lessons. So I was hearing all the songs that they were playing growing up. And so when I was, you know, five and six, my mom convinced the piano teacher that I was old enough to start playing. So I've been playing since then, and I was going to stop in middle school because there wasn't enough time to play the piano and play basketball.
so you found other passions.
Yeah, I see. But my sister convinced me. She's like, no, you're really good. You should keep playing.
And they saw something in you that you really were good, and you must have been enthused about it, too. Right?
I was, yeah. Because before that, maybe I was just playing because, I'm supposed to take the piano lessons and practice and do this. So that was a real kind of wake-up call from my sister.
Yeah, well, it's obviously followed you through your life. And you started guitar when you were like 12 or 13?
Yeah, in middle school.
And did you take up the guitar because you wanted to be a singer-songwriter, or you just were interested in learning new instruments?
I think I started playing the guitar because I wanted to sing, but I wouldn't have said that. I started playing the guitar because my older brother was playing guitar and classic rock songs and stuff, and I thought, that looks really fun. And as a middle school boy, it didn't seem okay for me to just start singing, like if I was hanging out with people. But if you had a guitar, it was suddenly this path to start singing.
Okay, but so you did want to sing. You were singing all during this, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems almost like separate things for some people. Did you actually study singing and formal singing, like opera?
Not at that age. At college, I did. But I grew up going to the Catholic Church, and I think I was the most excited person about the hymns. Every time a new hymn would come, I'd be like, all right, we're going to sing it. And some people would be excited. Some people wouldn't.
That's so great. I love that, that passion that started at such a young age. Now tell me when you did start writing music. You know, obviously you're a singer-songwriter now.
Yeah. At some point, it got in my head that it's okay to sing other people's songs, but really, it's even better. You can sing more if you sing your own songs. So that was like the thing that inspired me to start writing. Not necessarily that I had something to say, but just like, I can sing. I'm more legitimate as a singer if I'm singing my own songs. For some reason, that was my mindset. So that's what inspired me to start writing in like late high school.
And so you must have discovered that you did have something to say, right? It was a way for you to get out some of your feelings, I would assume.
Yeah.
Especially as a teenager, right?
Right. I was much more reluctant then to put, you know, what I was really thinking into the form of a song, and maybe less adept at, you know, I would say things very vaguely, and that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's how you learn how to express yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes sense to me. Now, let's talk about this wonderful new album, All the Stars You Hold. Tell us about the making of it. Did it take years? And you got so many great people to work on it with you. To tell us about the evolution of this wonderful album.
Well, my first two albums I did in this way where it was mostly me, like layers and layers of me playing all the different instruments and all the vocal harmonies. And for this one, I wanted to get other people involved because there's, as you know, so many talented musicians in Ithaca, and so how do we get them onto the album? So most of the songs have come from the last year or so. There's a couple older ones that date back a few years, but most of it is fresh material. So the process, which I've learned, I won't do it this way again, but this is how I did it. I started by recording my banjo parts and then singing over that, and I was recorded at home, you know, just with my own mic and computer. And then I would travel around Ithaca and go find my bass player friend Desmond, and he would we'd record his bass part, and then I'd go and, you know, sit with Steve Seelan. He'd play fiddle parts, and it was all just overdubbed like that, multi-track.
That's amazing. So did you have in mind the arrangements, or do you let people just riff on whatever they wanted to when they heard the song? How did that work?
Right.
That's amazing to me.
It was a lot of kind of improvisatory playing. We would sit and maybe they'd know the song a little bit or maybe not at all, and I wanted the players to have some freedom to play what they were feeling, and so that inevitably created things that I never would have thought of, because you can definitely arrange string parts and like make it a really definite song, but sometimes I think I'm just not that organized and creative in that way. I'd just rather hear what people will play in the moment and then put it together after.
That is really amazing to me. I'm surprised to hear that, because most people, when they write songs, they want to own them, at least in some ways. This is what I meant. This is what I want people to hear. Wow.
Yeah, so that comes through.
Real collaboration.
Yeah, the lyrics are going to be what they are, so I can own that part and the chord changes for the most part and the feel of the song, but yeah, it can develop for every new year that comes to it.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's really interesting. It turns into a song made from the chemistry of all these people. That really sounds like a whole new idea to me.
Yeah.
Now, I want to play an excerpt from All the Stars You Hold. This one's called Mama. Tell us a little bit about it. I loved it. I liked the rhythm of it and the feel. It was like a letter to your mother, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I wrote this, of course, with my mom in mind. And I don't call her Mama, so when I played it for her, she didn't realize it was for her. But I explained it, and now she understands. Oh. But it was a bit of like a reflection on what's important to me and what I've learned from my mother. And I've been saying this when I performed the song live, that she gave me a pep talk when I was a year or two out of college, and she said, "Don't wait for everything to line up and be perfect. Just go ahead and do that thing that you feel passionate about now." And I thought, well, I didn't know if she had any specific intentions behind saying that, but I ended up choosing between either traveling or getting into agriculture, and I chose agriculture, permaculture. And
Well, let's listen to an excerpt, Mama. Yeah.
Sunshine on the hillside, and there are shadows down low. Morning light is rising, and the rooster starts to crow. Well, they're walking up from the valley, and they're driving in from the town by the road. As family gathers around me, there are so many seeds to sow. Well, I'm grown up, Mama, doing right by you, living hard like you taught me to do. I've got no regrets, only unpaid debts for all the kindness from people like you.
I think it's such a sweet song. I really liked it. Did your mother like the song?
Yeah. She said, "That's such a Travis song." That was what she said when I first played it for her. Like, "Oh, I thought I was doing something new, but you know me too well." it's got that kind of uplifting feel to it.
And it's almost it is a tribute.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. I would, if I were your mama, I would have loved it. Now you seem to find inspiration from everywhere. You went on a big long bike tour and wrote an album about it. Mm-hmm. So tell us, when you're going about your everyday life, are you thinking about melodies or are lyrics popping into your head? What are you doing? How are you exercising your creativity in that way?
I definitely found when I started writing songs, like in high school and early in college, I found that I was in this mindset of turning every moment into a song, and that drove me crazy.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of turn that off and be like, all right, I get it. Everything, you can write a song about everything, but I don't want to do that. I just want to be present and then sit down later and maybe write a song. But yeah, some people I know, they always have melodies coming through their heads, but the only melodies coming through my head that I'm not trying to put there are just, catchy. earworms or whatever get stuck in your head. And so I really have to make space for myself to write.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I know. Some people can become obsessive, and that's all you do. Mm-hmm. Like somebody who's walking around their whole life with a camera in front of their face.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. You want to capture it and record it.
Yeah. So when do you live your life while you're capturing these moments?
Exactly.
Now, you say that you're exploring sound healing in your music. Tell us what that means. What is that?
Yeah. Well, there's more explicit sound healing. Like, I have some friends that do this, you know, working with Tibetan healing bowls and and the crystal bowls and gongs and things like that, where it's like you sit and you lie down and you just let the sound wash over you, or tuning forks and that sort of sound healing. I guess I take the approach in this songwriting music more of the sound that comes from the songs should be healing in nature, just to have that as a mindset. For when I'm crafting, you know, recordings and in live performances, that it should, at some level, you know, whether it's conscious or not, or noticed, be healing.
Yeah, I think music is healing, just in general. I mean, depending on, you know, if it's wild and crazy and it kind of makes you want to plug your ears, it's probably not. But,
but
for the most part,
right.
All these different genres are really healing. I mean, listen to classical and opera and pop and rock and folk and all of it. Yeah,
it's like taking a different medicine or a different herb for a different situation. You take a different style of music and it all.
Now, I want to play another excerpt from All the Stars You Hold. This one's called Humble. Mm-hmm. So tell us about this. This comes from maybe your meditation or...
Yeah, this came from... I wrote it when I was down in the Pisgah National Forest in North Carolina and camping with some friends in the wilderness, and just a really, really sweet time shared. Wake up and cook over the fire and go pick blueberries and walk up the creek. And it was a sweet time, and the people that I was with were very good at expressing gratitude. And so I just kind of had this flood of gratitude and humility. And so I wanted to write a song that captured that.
Let's listen to a bit of it.
When I'm gone, may they say I was too humble. May they say I gave too much away. May they say I gave thanks too often for this world that taught me how to pray. When we eat, we offer up a blessing for the food and where the food came from. When I lay me down, I am grateful for the day and all the days to come. When I sing, I hope my words are honest.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Travis Knapp. We're talking about his new album. It's called All the Stars You Hold. Now, I found that song, Humble, a song that could be healing to a lot of people. People need to hear that. I'm grateful. And they need to say it to themselves and be kind of gentle with themselves.
Yeah.
I found that from that song that was probably what you were trying to convey, I think.
Right. And I think the most important line in that song is in the third verse. It's, when I'm gone, may they say I was too joyful. And may they say I understood the pain of everyone who struggled on this journey. And we lifted up our spirits all the same. So to really be able to hold the entirety of humanity's experiences, and that I can be in this peaceful place and know that other people are not, and to still be, you know, raising our own spirits.
Yeah. It's like honoring where people are in some ways.
Yeah,
really. Really a wonderful song, I thought. Now, I know you're into permaculture, so tell us about that. I mean, it's obviously a great part of your life, probably a major part of your life. Well, what made you get into that?
I took over a friend's vegetable garden a few years back and didn't know what I was doing, but I had this space. And I just literally, I went to Lowe's and got seeds, which to me expresses how far I've come and like where I would source my seeds from now. But I just went and picked up some seeds and put them in the ground, and I left town for 2 weeks, and I came back and some plants came up. And so that miracle caught me. And while I was taking care of that garden, another person who was gardening there said, "Hey, do you know about permaculture?" And they started describing it to me, and basically it sounded like everything I cared about under one umbrella. Uh-huh. And so I right after that took a permaculture course immersion.
So to tell us what permaculture actually means to you, as somebody who's also a creative musician, and what does permaculture mean to you in regard to being a creative person?
Ah, that's a great question. Yeah, so it's a design approach to designing things that are not just sustainable but regenerative. So how can I approach my creativity in a way that's not just sustainable, but that's feeding me and, you know, of course, feeding those around me, hopefully. So the way that looks to me, for example, is I can't play music 5 nights a week. I have to have my hands in the earth and be gardening, you know, a few days a week, and to have that balance. And that feeds the creativity. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist teacher, said someone came to him once and said, "Oh, you could be traveling around the world teaching. People want your teaching every day, all the time. Like, why are you wasting your time with this lettuce in your garden?" And he said, "Well, if I didn't have the lettuce, I'd have nothing to teach about." So that's my approach.
The simple things in life. I'm so glad that more people are going back to, you know, the nature part of our lives, you know, because we've been so industrialized and so commercialized. And it's like you said, it's such a miracle. Plants grew while you were on your trip for 2 weeks. It's amazing, yeah.
When we can tie ourselves into the process a little bit. And there's the magic when you walk into the forest. Everything just releases, you relax. There's the healing of that. And then gardening is a way to tie yourself in beyond just, you know, stepping on the forest floor.
I understand that healing process about nature for sure. Now, let us play another excerpt from All the Stars You Hold. This one's called Grasshoppers and Ants, and this ties into what we were talking about, right? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the song. It's really sweet.
So it's based on the fable of the grasshoppers and the ants, and there's a lot of versions of this, but the version that I heard and remembered was the Japanese version, in which basically you have the ants working hard all season and growing food and building structures to stay in, and the grasshoppers are hanging out and they're playing music and dancing. And in one version of the fable, the grasshoppers say, "Oh, it's cold. Can we come in when it gets to be winter?" And the ants say, "No, you were just like hanging out and playing music. Why would we let you in?" And then the Japanese version that I liked, the ants said, "Oh, no, you definitely come in, because what you were doing, dancing and singing, that raised us up in a way that let us do our work of gardening and farming and building and all that." So I tried to capture both of those in the song.
That's great. Let's listen to it. Grasshoppers and Ants.
Where the corn and the vegetables grow, the ants were tending their fields of grain and building a hill of their own. Early each day they began their work, starting early each spring. As grasshoppers crouched in a field nearby, they were playing this song on their wings. They sang, "Chirrup, chirrup, don't look down. Chirrup, chirrup, I love the sound. Chirrup, chirrup, it's all around. Chirrup, chirrup, I love it now."
Yeah, I love that. It's you know, it is. It's joyous. You use the word joy a lot, you know, when you talk about your work and what you're trying to convey in song. So that conveys it really well for me.
Uh-huh.
Now, you do have a philosophy of looking for joy. Is that why you got involved with the circus? I noticed that you are involved in the local circus here as the ringmaster oftentimes.
Yeah. Well, Amy Cohen, who's the director of Circus Culture, among other things, she has this approach to circus that is basically, circus is doing the thing that makes you come alive, and you get a lot of people together doing the things that make them come alive. and it's going to be joyous. And so that's why I'm drawn to this circus in particular. But now my eyes are open to circus in general. I'm like, oh, circus is a great celebration of what humans can do. And
yeah, and it can be fun and even educational. And so what do you do as a ringmaster, though? Tell us what that role is.
Right. It varies based on the show. At first, the way that Amy convinced me to be a ringmaster, she said, you just be yourself and introduce the acts. I'm like, oh, I can do that. That's really easy. And then it turned and then we had this circus up at Cornell for the Tuesday series in the summer, and we had a stage, and I had a clown to work with, Holly Adams, a magnificent clown, and I'm like, I really have to be a ringmaster. I need to know what this is. And so, you know, just playing off of the clown and off of the acts and off of the crowd. So it's an MC role. It can be a lot of different things, but it's just playing host and kind of tying the
God, you know, every
together.
Time I, when everybody says host of a circus or something, I always think of the Joker in Cabaret.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that devious little Joker guy. But yeah, I mean, the ringmaster can be a fun character, too, not just somebody who's kind of dark and...
Right. There's a lot of directions it can go.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, speaking of which, you know, you are searching for the joy, but there seems to be... I mean, there's a darker side to life, and I know you've been able to touch base with that, too, because the final cut we're going to play is called Nagasaki Flame.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that song. I mean, obviously, it's about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and it's a beautiful song.
Thank you. Yeah, that's one of the older tunes I wrote, and I was actually in Japan watching the news about... this was like 2006, news about Iran and nuclear, like who gets to make these decisions about who has nuclear weapons and even nuclear power, and just got me thinking from that perspective of being overseas and like what's the U.S.'s role in all of this, and tried to ask questions in that song and also just bring it to people's attention. The Flame of Nagasaki was brought from the rubble of the bombing initially as a symbol of vengeance. Like, how dare this happen? We need to get vengeance for this. And then it over the decades morphed into a symbol of peace.
Mm.
Like, we can't let this happen again anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I just stumbled across this shrine in the middle of Tokyo and I was struck by it. That's
where the song came from. Well, let's listen to it. Nagasaki Flame.
Deep in the heart of the city, behind all the schools and the roads, green copper lantern and a gate in the rain are keeping their watch over a voice in the cold. Voice is the heart of people whose prayers are the same. 10,000 paper cranes weeping beside a dove and the Nagasaki flame.
Yeah, I that's one of the most beautiful songs, and it's bluesy.
Yeah.
Well, where do all these influences come from for you, though? I mean, you sort of advertise yourself as a folk influence person, but I see blues and bluegrass.
It depends a lot on the instrument I'm playing. So on this one, I'm playing the keyboard, and the reason I started playing banjo was so I could pick up a different style, because when I sit at the keyboard, it gets into the bluesy and the jazzy and the pop sort of stuff. So I kind of couldn't break out of it. So I said, oh, I'll pick up the banjo and be a folk musician that way. I mean, the guitar has a similar effect too. But
yeah, well, this was really effective for this song. I was really, really impressed by Nagasaki Flame. I thought it was really moving.
And Eric Johnson's saxophone playing on this was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And there's four layers of Eric playing saxophone. This was a really fun one to put together. And he wasn't listening to the previous layers when he would play the next one. So he could just pour his heart into it.
You know what? You capture the haunted feeling that we all have about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dropping the bomb.
Right.
Destroying lives, destroying cities, and we've never really reconciled it. And this right. just captures it. It has to be blues.
Right. It's true.
It's amazing. Yes, yeah. Now, do you think music can change people's lives and change the world? And did you get involved in the politics of trying to change people's lives with your songs?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I made this decision in my songwriting a few years ago that I would only predominantly put lyrics into my songs that were things I wanted to say over and over again that would manifest, that would, you know, become reality. So that's really changed the way I write songs to that end. I know that it's more maybe a mantra for me. It's like, this is the thing that I want to say. And by saying it and affirming it for myself, maybe other people will hear that too and change your mindset just a little bit. And that's big. I think that's the way that we can really shift a culture.
Yeah. Putting positives into the world right now is certainly needed. This culture mm-hmm. absolutely needs some healing and mm-hmm. some feeling of peace.
Yeah.
So I think you're on the right road with this stuff.
Yeah.
So you said in the beginning that you did this album in this strange way where you went to people's places and they put in the so you're not going to do that again. What's your next move going to be? Are you just going to do straight studio stuff, or are you going to go back to solo?
Oh, well, yeah, I'll probably. This album took longer than I've taken for an album, a few months really. But I ideally would like to record live, have the whole band recording the tunes live. So that just ends up meaning you have more time interacting with your friends and playing music rather than sitting and editing on a computer. So that was the main decision factor for that. But at the moment I'm focusing on playing live and performing a lot and. Uh-huh. No dreams of the next album yet, but it'll come.
Nothing on the horizon right away. Mm-hmm. You know what I was going to ask you, too? We only have a couple minutes left. Since this album, and it's such a beautiful album, people go out and get it, really, was so much of it was improv and stuff. Is this something you could reproduce live in a concert if somebody said, play Nagasaki
right.
Flame? Since some of it was improv, and it's not really written down, right?
Right. It won't be note for note ever, yeah. But we can capture the same spirit of it and have the same instrumentation. Yeah, so.
So it'll be an all new version with the same kind of flame, if we can call it that, of the song still
yeah.
intact.
Yeah, it just lets the song be alive and move through time.
I like that. And feel the chemistry of the audience, mm-hmm. which I bet is absolutely fascinating for musicians to get a sense of how different things feel when there's an audience.
Right, or when people are dancing versus not dancing, or dancing this way versus another way. I've been doing these electronic dance remixes with Astrohawk. He's an electronic dance music producer. And so the way that people dance to that music when I'm playing banjo and singing with this electronic beat, it's so different than if I'm just playing banjo with a stand-up bass player.
And,
but they're both celebratory. You know, whenever someone's dancing, I think that's a powerful moment.
So yeah.
As a performer, I love it.
Well, Travis Knapp, we're almost out of time. Can you give people some contact information? Where can they get your CD, too? Is it mm-hmm. available at the local stores? And
well, it's being released August 14th, having a release concert at the Carriage House. And then you can get it online at my website, travisknapp.com. And it'll be at Green Star. Yeah, they're selling local music there now, which is really great thing.
Yeah, they are. That's great.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay, well, Travis Knapp, thank you so much for joining us. And the album is just wonderful.
Thank you
for this gift to all of us. Again, the album is called All the Stars You Hold. And my guest has been Travis Knapp. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.